Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with Frank Perez and Jeffrey Palmquist, authors of In Exile, the history and lore surrounding New Orleans gay culture and its oldest gay bar. We'll also hear from novelist Clarence Nero, founder of the Bayou Soul Writers Conference. Perhaps only in New Orleans are there bars deserving of their own biographies. Frank Perez and Jeffrey Palmquist are the authors of In Exile, the history and lore surrounding New Orleans gay culture and its oldest gay bar. Jeffrey grew up in South Dakota and is a bartender at the Café Lafitte in Exile, while Frank Perez grew up in Louisiana and is a barfly there. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
You seem to have a symbiotic relationship, I think. Oh, now, Jeffrey, why did you think the time was right to undertake this history?
I think the timing actually just kind of found itself. If you can just kind of picture, I guess you'd say, a typical day at Café Lafitte with myself bartending and Frank partaking. Some event happened, you know, something that I rolled my eyes and said, I so need to write a book. And it just took off from there. And about a year and a half later, here we go.
Wow. How do you think, Frank, that it's possible for a bar to be such a cultural center?
In New Orleans, there are many bars that would fit that description. I think for Café Lafitte and the gay community, it has to do with the fact that it's the oldest gay bar, not only in the city, but some would say in the country.
That's really amazing, isn't it? And when did it open?
Café Lafitte opened in 1933.
So tell us a little bit about the history over time.
Sure. The bar originated at what is now known as Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop at the corner of Bourbon and St. Philip. And in the 1930s, gay bars as we know them today did not exist, indeed legally could not exist, but that bar was about as gay-friendly as the times would permit. And that was pretty much where the bravest gay people who wanted to drink would go, and the owners were very welcoming and receptive to them. The problem happened in 1953. The building came under new ownership, and the new owner did not want any gay people at his bar. And so the owners who were leasing the space said, that's fine, we'll go down the street and open our own bar. And on the opposite end of the block is where the current bar is, and it's been there since 1953.
Wow, isn't that amazing? That's such a long time. Now, you mention in this book a lot of things about New Orleans gay culture that are really well known. Southern decadence, for example, the five gay Mardi Gras crews, the Saints and Sinners Literary Festival. But I'd like to hear some about something maybe a little less well known, like, say, the Gertrude Stein Society.
Well, the Gertrude Stein Society was one of several efforts to organize the gay community in the 1970s. And that happened right around the time of the Upstairs Lounge fire, which many people may remember, but interestingly, not a lot of people in the gay community remember the fire. It's not something that's often talked about. And that was one of the major milestones in the history of gay New Orleans.
Right. I remember when the Times-Picayune did that big article about the anniversary of the fire. It's incredible. And tell us about some of the people who were in the Gertrude Stein Society and what they did. Do you remember?
Well, there were just a number of local community organizers. There were some grad students from Tulane. And one of the revolutionary things they did was start a television program. And one of the guests was Christine Jorgensen, who achieved some notoriety as being, well, they claim she was the first person to have a sex change operation. She wasn't the first, but she was the first widely known. Mm-hmm. And so they also were very instrumental when Anita Bryant came to town, the famous Florida orange juice homophobe. And that really galvanized the gay community at that point. That was really the beginning of political organizing for the gay community in New Orleans.
Right. And Faubourg Marigny Art and Books has also been an important cornerstone of gay culture, hasn't it?
It has. It was the very first gay-themed and feminist-themed bookstore in the South, and it's still going very strong. It was founded by a man named Tom Horner, and it's now owned by Otis Fennell, who is very, very instrumental in the community today.
And you said in this book, which I found so interesting, that you found a lot of material in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered archives at Tulane. What sort of things are in that archive?
Mostly they have what would be called ephemera. They have menus from restaurants that were frequented by gays. They have posters for events at gay bars. Things like that.
It's just fascinating to me to think that that's just sitting there waiting to be used. You know what I mean? For
Indeed.
People to research. Oh, and how did you collaborate? What was your process?
Together, where I drove Frank, or, you know, we drove each other in putting the project together is, you know, my experience at the bar and with regular customers and people that threw people through someone else, I was able to line up the interviews and put us together with the people that are still around and that could tell us the stories that certainly needed to be recorded, you know, before the history was lost. Interestingly enough, in the year and a half in putting the book together, we actually lost two of the people that we interviewed. And to me, that really just solidified how important it was to put this together, you know, so people could see the history of gay New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. That's such a problem when you're writing a book like this.
Yeah, and another part of what Jeff was saying was that it's important to remember many of the men we interviewed are really advanced in age, and they are conditioned by the times that they grew up in not to really talk about this sort of thing. And so Jeff was very instrumental in lending credibility to the project and getting people to feel more comfortable about opening up. So Jeff was instrumental in the research.
And when you ask people to confide memories like this, you need them to feel safe and you need to invite them in that kind of way. And it sounds like you really did. A lot of famous people have been to drink at this bar. A lot of famous writers. Could you tell us some of those? I love that part.
You know, it's interesting enough. Again, I can tell you now that tradition continues.
I'm sure.
And out of, you know, in keeping the bar with the spirit that it is, I won't divulge a lot of the regular, the visitors that we get that we're in town.
We interviewed a few men who had met and had encounters, and I'll leave it at that, with Tennessee Williams. We also interviewed a man who met Truman Capote at the bar, and also someone who was very annoyed by Ernest Hemingway at the bar, actually.
Wow. I know. I did love that. I really did. And the whole thing, I mean, what did it do for you to write this book? I mean, every author gets something out of this journey. You devote a lot of time and energy. You meet a lot of people. You pour your heart out on the page. What did it do for you two?
Well, for me, it satisfied a basic need to have this written down. I love history, and being a part of the gay community, I wanted to learn about our heritage, and that book had not been written. There have been a number of articles here and there, but a full book-length treatment had not been done. There have been several attempts, but nothing ever came to fruition, and so for me, one of the biggest things that satisfied me with the project was just having learned so much myself, and that was one of the major things for me.
Definitely. And to echo what Frank said there a little bit, one of the things that's, I think, probably holds true in any sort of history, in this instance, gay history in New Orleans, is that it hadn't been recorded. And, you know, as being a bartender and at a gay bar on Bourbon Street in the middle of the gay area there, so many of the young people coming out take for granted that they can walk down the street holding hands, that they can do whatever they want as a gay person. And that there were a lot of people before them that paved the way that so they could do that. And I think it was so important to put this out. Not that all of them are going to read it, but at least we did our part to put it out there so the history is available and they're aware of it.
And you've given so many resources to people who might want to build on this and write more and discover more. It's a really useful compendium of knowledge. I really think that. We've been talking with Frank Perez and Jeffrey Palmquist, authors of In Exile, The History and Lore Surrounding New Orleans Gay Culture and Its Oldest Gay Bar. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Clarence? Lawrence Nero is a native of the New Orleans Ninth Ward, a graduate of Howard University, and an accomplished novelist. He's the author of three books, Cheeky, A Child Out of Desire, his autobiographical debut, Three Sides to Every Story, and Too Much of a Good Thing Ain't Bad. He's here today in another role, founder of the Bayou Soul Writers Conference, which takes place July 5th and 6th here in New Orleans at the Holiday Inn Downtown and the New Orleans Public Library. Hi, Clarence.
Hi.
Welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Now, you launched this event last year, and now you're back. So it must have gone pretty well.
I think it went pretty good. I mean, people who, from the writers to the readers to the young people who came, we had over 250 high school students, which was a big turnout. And when we did the surveys, asking them how they thought about it, everybody gave us excellent marks. They said they had never gone to an event like that. They've never met a writer before in person. We had a lot of good things happen. We had writers who ended up with book deals. One writer was discovered. She ended up with a book deal with Wahida Clark Publishing. And Wahida's with Cash Money Content and Grand Central Publishing. We had another young lady, Drusilla Mars, who ended up with a book deal with Ashton Jaquavis, who are also best-selling authors who have their own publishing house. We gave our scholarship money for kids to go to college.
Yay!
Yeah, we did a lot of great things in 1 year. We got an interview with CNN, who covered the story, because I started the scholarship in my brother's name, who was murdered in the city of New Orleans, at Sean Simmons Inspirational Essay Contest. And I think overall, from the food, people talked about how it had good food, it had good music, we had poetry and singing, we had authors. It was like a literary conference they said they had never gone to before. And I said, of course not, because you've never gone to a literary conference in New Orleans.
Exactly.
You know, that's good. We're going to bring that unique touch to it. You know, we're not going to just have you sitting around listening to panels all day. We're going to mix it up and give you some opportunity to mix and mingle with the authors on a more personal level, you know, over some good food and also some performances, people who are there to inspire through their music, because, you know, literacy is also music.
Absolutely.
You know, stories are told.
Well, and the other thing is that it's so great you have the kids there, because sometimes when you're young, that first writer you meet makes all the difference in the world to you. It just shows you that writing is possible as a way of life. You touch a lot of lives with that, with just getting one writer to meet one kid, I think. Now, you've got some really intriguing events on this program. On Thursday, there's an event honoring the Distinguished Gentlemen of Literature. I love that name. These are distinguished gentlemen. Tell us who will be there.
We have Omar Tyree, Victor Laval, and Eric Jerome Dickey, and Carl Weber, who we're honoring this year. They're all major players in the business. They've written many books. You know, some of them have had success in the literary world as well as popular fiction. So, you know, Victor Laval have won the Ernest Gaines Award. He won the National Book Award. Very accomplished young man.
Right.
We're honored to have him.
One of my favorite books, The Big
Machine. Very talented writer, gracing our presence. I just think it's going to be so great for people to hear him read and to meet him, especially the young people, too, just to see someone of that caliber taking time out to come speak with them, you know. And then we have James Baldwin's nephew, Trevor Baldwin, because this award was starting in James Baldwin's name. He's going to be coming from New York to give the awards and to speak to them. And I think a lot of writers are excited about that they actually get to meet James Baldwin's nephew.
That's great.
You know, so I'm excited about that event.
And he's working on a biography of Baldwin, isn't he?
Yes.
Fantastic. So he'll talk about that. James Baldwin is such an inspiring writer anyway, you know, the more you get his work out there, the better.
Definitely. I mean, I loved his work. You know, I read a lot of his books and been inspired. And I just think I'm going to have a conference. The theme of this conference is Standing on the Shoulders of Giants.
Right.
That's the theme. So I was like, that's a giant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he set the standard. He was out there writing during the time of civil rights, you know, fighting for rights and using his literature to empower people. So I thought he would be a good person.
Never pulled his punches either.
Right.
Another writer you're honoring is James Wilcox.
Yeah, James Wilcox. I do feel like James Wilcox was my professor. His writing is a very provocative, you know, with modern Baptists. He touched on some very sensitive issues. He was my professor at LSU and mentor, and I wanted to honor him as well.
He's also one of the funniest writers in Louisiana, so you know people will laugh. And then you have a luncheon. So tell us about that luncheon and who'll be there.
It's more of a reception. It's going to be at M. Francis Gallery, African-American Art Gallery on Julia Street. And that's Friday from 11 to 1. And we're honoring that in Zordner Hurston, who was another trailblazer in literature.
Mm-hmm.
Goes with the theme, Standing on the Shoulders of Giants. And we're honoring Mary Monroe, who's a New York Times bestseller. We honor Rashonda Tate Bilski, who just won an NAACP award. and we're honoring Rollin Domingue. She was in my writing class at LSU. She wrote a book called Mercy of Thin Air.
Beautiful
book.
That book
was translated in over 26 languages all over the country. I think these are women who are doing big things in literature, who set the standard, you know, who are writing different type of things mm-hmm. and writing what they want to write.
Right.
You know, and that's what Zora did. You know, she wrote what she wanted to write at a time when people criticized her because it didn't fit in with what everybody else was doing. So we want to honor them and celebrate them. So we have a great program plan. Some things they're going to be surprised that we're doing. I'm excited as a writer to be honoring people that I admire and respect, colleagues of mine. It's fun to honor people. You know, I was surprised last year how well it went. I mean, we had writers actually crying because they felt like they had never been honored before.
Aww.
You know, people were actually literally in tears. And I was like, wow, they really were moved by it.
Well, you speak from your heart. You know, sometimes it has that effect. Yeah. And one of the things I think is so great is that both Zora Neale Hurston and James Baldwin spent time in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that adds another nice touch to all this, I think. Mm-hmm. You're going to be honoring book clubs at this event, which I think is so great. So I wonder, how have book clubs been important to you personally as a writer?
Personally, when I came out, you know, book clubs really, they embraced me. They help drive my book sales quickly. You have these women have these book clubs all over the country, and they're excited. They would fly me in, put me up in a hotel, feed me, you know, and have an event with me. All this attention around me, and that's how much they love books and how much they support books. They supported so many writers. Honestly, in the African-American community, if it had not been for book clubs, I don't think that you would have as many popular African-American writers. Those book club women really drive the sales and keep the industry alive. When people feel like it's dying, those book club women, they really get on the internet and they push and they do events. You know, we're going to honor them because they make things great for us. They mm-hmm. gave us careers and the opportunity to have somebody to support us. So we want to support them and let them know that they're just as important in this process.
Right.
Without them, there would be no us.
And most of them read real books.
And they read. These are people who love reading.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're very serious about literature. So they're very important. So that was a component I had to add in there.
Well, it's good to have a literary conference for readers and writers, and for everybody.
For everybody.
You know, you want them all to come and enjoy it. And in New Orleans, it's going to be great.
Yeah, this is a great place to, you know, everybody say that was brilliant. You came up with that idea.
And
to
it's
do
perfect.
That idea around Essence and have all of us together, because a lot of writers are in town anyway, but to assemble us in one place where we all could mix and mingle, because a lot of them know each other, heard of each other, respect each other, and it's a time for authors to mix and mingle with each other and to celebrate each other. You know, I wanted to create that atmosphere of celebration, not competition. You know, atmosphere of uplifting the community, having a greater purpose in the vein of the Harlem Renaissance writers.
And I've always believed when one writer benefits, every writer benefits. You're doing your part, I tell you.
I'm trying. It's not easy.
Well, I know. It's hard work.
It's hard work. We do need the support. That's mm-hmm. why I'm asking to support this event in some big way or small way. Whatever you could do, one way is to come out to our mm-hmm. college fundraiser extravaganza Thursday night from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Holiday Inn. There's free food. We have Rebirth Brass Band planned.
Great.
We have some performances and presentations. And all of that event is surrounded by trying to raise money for our scholarship mm-hmm. fund.
Well, it's good work. Keep it up. We've been talking with Clarence Nero, who's the founder of the upcoming Bayou Soul Writers Conference. And for more information, check out bswconference.com. Thanks, Clarence.
Thank you.
Some of my favorite songs are inspired by children's books. Some musicians are nostalgic for the places and experiences of childhood classics. Think, for example, of Elton John's Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, which was inspired by L. Frank Baum's Wizard of Oz.
When are you gonna come down? When are you going to land? I should have stayed on the phone. I should have. My, oh my, you know you can't hold me forever. I didn't sign up for you. I'm not a present for your friends to open. This boy's too young to be singing the blues.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. You can see today's guest, Clarence Nero, and lots of terrific writers at the Bayou Soul Writers Conference, July 5th and 6th at the Holiday Inn downtown and the New Orleans Public Library. Check out bswconference.com for more information. The New Orleans Public Library is continuing its summer reading program with these events at the main library at 219 Loyola Avenue. On Saturday, July 7th at 11 a.m., there'll be a Hootenanny, and by that I mean an owl party, for ages 3 to 11. And on Wednesday, July 11th at 10:30, the Zoomobile will visit, and it's all free. Novelist Diana Rowland will sign her new book, Even White Trash Zombies Get the Blues, Saturday, July 7th at 2 p.m. at Barnes & Noble in Mandeville. Joseph Scott Morgan discusses and signs Blood Beneath My Feet, The Journey of a Southern Death Investigator, Tuesday, July 10th from 5:30 to 7 at Garden District Bookshop, and Wednesday, July 11th at 6 p.m. at Barnes & Noble West Bank. The Contemporary Fiction Book Group discusses Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, Tuesday, July 10th at 7 p.m. at Barnes & Noble Metairie. The Horror Fiction Book Group discusses Jaws by Peter Benchley, Wednesday, July 11th at 7 p.m. at Barnes & Noble Metairie. And new on the library front, the Algiers Regional Library at 3014 Holiday Drive will have its ribbon cutting July 11th at 11 a.m. And watch for a full day of celebration Saturday, July 14th, with appearances by Cornell Landry and Diane de las Casas and Kid Chef Eliana. And don't forget, there are story times every Wednesday morning at 11:30 at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Major support for The Reading Life is provided by Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org or email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org. Thanks for listening and keep reading.